Welcome to the Concept 101 podcast. My name is Daniel.
I'm Jules.
And I'm Stefan.
We are three concept artists currently working in the film and games industry, as well as the organizers of the Concept 101 event in London. Today, we're going to be breaking off from our formula a tiny bit and talking about just one thing today, which is we want to talk about world building versus image building. So to give you guys a little bit of an intro on this, what we're really talking about today is like the different processes that people go down and how this all applies to the real actual like job industry that we work in. A lot of work that you see on ArtStation, and we'll get into this more again, is not necessarily representative of the actual job. And we've spoken about that before, but we want to talk about the different things that you can do in your career, how these can kind of like influence your body of work and how this all ties into making you a more kind of accomplished artist overall. So to start off, you know, Jules, before the episode, we were talking about keyframing and, you know, the fact that a lot of people recently seem to have like a little bit of a negative take on keyframing, yeah. Which seems to be very weird because it's a lot of our work, especially in the film industry. So do you want to start off and like talk to us about that and like where you've heard about these kind of things?
Yeah. I think we've been to a few events lately, for example, IMAG, and just also like talking to people on Instagram and Discord,
yeah,
and some LinkedIn posts as well, where people talk about, they tend to criticize a lot keyframes, the way that it is portrayed on the internet specifically, right?
Yeah.
And people tend to think that the way that the keyframes are presented on ArtStation, for example, and the way that students use them in their own work is very wrong and misrepresents the way we use them in the industry, which I kind of agree. Students' work, the way they use keyframe, isn't really similar to what we do in the industry.
Yeah.
However, that's what I think we should talk about right now, is like what and why it differs.
Yeah, I think you were talking about, you know, like seeing lots of kind of like negative interactions with, and I don't want to just like leave it at keyframes, but also, you know, like Stefan, you do kind of environment paintings and these kind of things within your workflow, not necessarily what we would refer to as keyframes, but still those kind of pretty pictures that people like to kind of put in like big quotation marks and be like, concept art's not about pretty pictures, kind of thing. That's usually the
it's the all about phrases. The design.
Yeah. And I think especially maybe because of, I mean, I say maybe, it's definitely because of the increase of like awareness and things like AI, you know, that we've seen over the last few years, that people really seem to, or a lot of professionals seem to be very much rallying against the idea that there is any space at all for quote unquote pretty pictures in concept art.
Yeah.
I've definitely seen a lot of posts from people online, some which are surprisingly vitriolic, I think, where people are saying things like, yeah, you know, I've always known that this was bullshit. That's why I've never done a painting in my life. I'm all about design, baby. I'm a real artist and you're not. It's, you know, a very kind of, I want to say, mean way of looking at the industry and the way people create art and stuff. Yeah.
I want to say, like, I had a colleague that I remember, like, when AI just started out, and he said, oh, man, I better... like, you know, I better watch out because my whole thing is doing like pretty interesting images. Essentially what you would say keyframes. But obviously it's not really, the way people look at keyframes is not really what we actually do. Like, actually, sorry, one more thing I wanted to bring up in here is some of the stuff that became popular when Jama released a lot of his courses. And this kind of like style of keyframes. I want to ask, like, is this something that you guys do a lot during your work as well, professional work?
So I think what you're, just to expand on what you're saying a little bit more, is like, is essentially, before we, like, I guess it's worth talking about with regards to keyframes and how people perceive them, like we were talking about earlier, that kind of industry versus non-industry presentation and the way that people use them. And I think bringing up Jama, you know, we've had him at the event. He's amazing, brilliant artist. But he's an interesting example, right? Because he has, for a good chunk of his career now, publicized using like Kitbash packs and stuff. And obviously he platforms people who use these things to create really beautiful images. Whereas the reality is that even within his workflows, he doesn't use that many of those things for his professional work. So there's kind of this weird, I want to say like almost dichotomy between like the real world applications of like where we use keyframes and the imaginary applications that you see on ArtStation.
Yeah, yeah. which definitely separates the way that the majority of, let's say, students or non-keyframe artists perceive keyframes, and the way that keyframe artists or people that do keyframe in the day-to-day job perceive keyframes. And so, like, what to you, like, Stefan, what is a keyframe for you? Like, in terms of how do you think a student sees a keyframe? What makes a keyframe for the majority of people?
I think for a majority of people, keyframe just makes a singular image that has one focal point in the image and tells a very, very simple story, almost like from what I was taught before I entered the industry. Like, keyframe is almost like a freeze frame from a movie, right? But in reality, you know, there's so many beautiful freeze frames in a movie that you can take, but not all of them are useful. But we perceive, like, even, for example, like a shot of someone's head, someone picking up a gun, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's what certain students might be like, oh, it's a keyframe. And I thought, like, oh, that's a keyframe, right? But in reality, you wouldn't, most likely, you wouldn't do a keyframe guy just, like, picking up a gun, you know? You just do, like, a storyboard for it or something.
And we do see a lot of that kind of keyframes on our station. Like, I have a few. I don't want to say any names, but I know exactly, like, at least, like, 10 projects where you have, like, someone just in a room or picking up something or talking to someone else, and there's like some yellow text at the bottom that tells a story. And it's like a still from a what could be a short film or what could be a small narrative piece.
Yeah.
But just by itself, I think this is like the most keyframe thing someone could think of, but it's actually the least keyframe thing that we would do in the industry.
Yeah. I just before we get like too ahead of ourselves, I just want to clarify, like, so what is, you know, like, let's just put this out there then. What are the differences between the perception between these two things, like professional and student level? I think, like you, Stefan, said, student level work is very much often about, yes, it's about a moment. Yes, it has a focal point. Yes, it has all this stuff, but it's often not showing that much. It doesn't have what I think we would call like production value to it, right? Mm-hmm. So somebody gets a really nice 3D model. Often that's a 3D model which maybe they actually buy online rather than creating themselves. And then, like you said, they have a, you know, a guy in a room picking up a gun. They have an establishing shot of the room, which, okay, that's slightly more useful, but it's a room which is full of random stuff they found on Sketchfab. And then you have a close-up of the dude's face, like kissing a gun or something cringe, and then another shot of them like standing over somebody in like very dramatic lighting and there's blood everywhere, you know, which is rarely what we get to ask to do, because I think, and you can jump in here, Jules, but really professional keyframe work or pretty picture work is the final level of the problem solving that other professionals say that they do, which is why that they're better than the people who do keyframes. In my personal experience, all of the keyframes or the vast majority of keyframes that I've done for professional work have been the end result of a very long design process, which then the final step of it is, so what does this look like in context? You know, what does this actually mean within the context of the show that you're working on?
It is definitely always a final result, right? Depending on the show, I had sometimes very little time, which makes it harder because I have to design and make the keyframe at the same time, which is not best opportunity, the best thing to have. Or sometimes I had like, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks to design a whole set, let's say.
Yeah.
With a set extension. And
one day at the end to do a keyframe.
Yeah, one day. Or like I just work on the whole scene, on the whole design for a while, sketches, maybe the whole layout, do a lot of paint overs, get to the client, get feedback, move some windows, move some trees, blah, 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 blah. And at the end, I do have, let's say, maybe a Blender scene, or I have, which is a result of all the design work we did with the client and all the meetings we had. And then by that time, I can hit probably render and then do a nice pass of paint over, add the nice flares, a nice noise on top of it, maybe add a character.
Some mist, maybe.
Yeah, you know, like, okay, how is this actually, how is the set I designed using the movie? Okay, well, this guy arrives with a road and he's on the bike. So let's take a bike, let's take a guy, and let's present this set a nice way, having this kind of setting. But this keyframe tasks comes at the end of designing the whole environment.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note as well that, like, when you are doing those, like, again, those like pretty pictures, whether it's in games or films, the reason it's important is because you can spend 10, 12, a million weeks designing stuff, whether it's, you know, designing flora and fauna that's going to go around your environment, designing the characters that are going to be in it, designing how the roads look, the buildings, whatever. But until you see it all together in the lighting that it's going to be in the layout it's going to be in, how do you know if it works? And I think this is the thing, is it's important to understand that, you know, a lot of people who slag off the kind of work that, again, like a lot of us do, it's like, yes, it is less common, I suppose, than design work, but it's important because without that kind of work, you don't know if the designs will work at all.
And I think this is even more important in the movie industry because, let's say, in a game, your clients, your art directors, the game designers, they're very used to the game. They understand the game quite well. They are almost artists themselves, right? So you can maybe show them a turntable of a character.
Yeah.
And that can be fine because these guys are part of the video game production and they can see all the other keyframes and design that people have been doing. They have maybe more imagination or more creativity. In the film, not always, but quite often, you're working for someone who's working for someone. And maybe they are working for someone, you know, and then you can just stretch to a very long chain of people working for people. And the people at the top, sometimes they don't really know what they're looking at because they haven't looked at your, they haven't really catched up what you're doing for maybe like 2 weeks because you've been working with people below them. And also some of them might just be investors, maybe not investors, but like just decision makers,
producers.
Right? Producers, yeah. Who don't really, you know, if you show them a bat, they're like, oh, well, it's a fucking bat. Like, you need to show them the bat in the cave and some description of what is that scene linked to the script that they are reading at the same time so they can have a very good understanding of what your design and how it fits within the movie.
Yeah.
So it's like a tool to sell your design to people who don't really understand movie production.
I have a question about it still, though. So, like, do you guys ever get, like, a script and they go, oh, we want to imagine this scene. But is that like, would it be like, your first decision would be like, okay, I'm going to design this like building that's in there. And I mean, then I'm going to put it in a keyframe? Or would it be like, oh, I'm going to do a keyframe about it, see what they think about it, and then I'll design the building.
I think it really depends on the amount of time that you're given, especially in, and I'd love to hear about how this works for you, Steph, in games as well. But especially in film, because it's usually such tight turnarounds, you usually don't have time to go through a bunch of design process to get to the final thing. It's just like design something and we'll see how we feel about it. And then you put it in some context and then you light it well and do the things that you're good at. Which I think, you know, it's one of, I wish there was just a little bit more time in the film industry because I feel like the work that everybody could do would be so much better with just a little bit more time to think about what we're doing. But generally, I think that's kind of part of the job of a concept artist working in the film industry is that you have to be kind of light on your feet and just be like, you know, when someone says, I need an alien creature in like a spaceship and I need to see how this looks for my script, then you got to jump right into it. And I think that also, I'll let you expand on this, Jules, but this really goes into the type of work that you're doing because if you're doing pitch work versus pre-production versus post-production, it's all totally different processes.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up a little bit here, like for video games, that I'm doing like a lot of kind of blue sky, whatever you want to call it, exploration.
Don't break NDA, Stefan. Don't do it.
Well, I'm just doing like a lot of exploration for the project right now. A lot of kind of keyframes as well, what you would call them, or like for example, I'm designing a lot of like points of interest and stuff like that, right? But within the images that I'm making, I'm still trying to come up with like a little story. Especially this was like a feedback that we had recently from the directors, like we want to see some little unique story that's related to the characters that are in this game that make it a bit more ownable, you know. And that's like, so now, for example, I have to put in characters with like some sort of a story into my image, into every image. It's like, so now it is a bit more of a keyframe, but I'm still not just doing the keyframe, but also doing the environment and like coming up with like a overall interesting idea. But what I want to say here, for example, all these images are very, when I say keyframes, I think it's a good point to say that they are kind of like mood designs. So none of the designs are final.
Yeah.
They're all like kind of hitting the right spot, kind of hitting the right mood, you know, kind of hitting the right shapes. but not, it's not final designs, it's not final turnaround. It's like, it's okay, but we'll have to probably redesign it in the future.
So here your task is pretty much almost pre-production, trying to just find ideas and like just almost inspire the people on top of you.
Exactly.
And just come up with new ideas and come up with cool stuff, right?
Yeah.
But how often would you do that in a video game project, and how long in the development of a movie, or sorry, of a game, do you do that kind of keyframe? Like, how long does this pre-production last?
I think it depends, but I think probably a couple months, three months, maybe 4 months. I think
some people who've worked on games sometimes where it lasted 3 years. Yeah. So it really depends, right?
Yeah.
Then you get cancelled.
I worked on a game where we almost had no pre-production time. Everything was production. I cannot say like how horrible that was, but I've also worked on games that are much more organized in that sense, where there is like a set timeline, like now we're doing pre-production.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 6 months or something is usually a good amount, I would say, to like populate your art book or whatever you want to call it.
Your Bible.
Your art Bible, yeah.
But I think that kind of comes to the crux of it and the kind of misunderstanding, which is that a lot of people have, which is whether they're professionals or, you know, students who are talking about, oh, keyframes don't matter, this kind of work will get replaced or whatever. The reality is that it probably won't, because design work alone lacks a certain quality, which is that it's not very inspirational to most people. The reality is that a lot of people you work with on projects are amazing artists themselves, but maybe they're amazing artists in terms of their ability to code or to 3D model or to direct things. But it doesn't mean that they have creative vision in terms of the mood or set dressing or all these things that we deal with as concept artists. A lot of them do, sure, but it's not the case all the time. So really the job that we have as concept artists is not, to do anything except to inspire people. Like, that is essentially the crux of our job. It's to we've spoken before about the fact that like we'll design things that will then be taken the whole way through the production and used as references. But the reality is that most of those things that we design are really inspirations, right? People take them and then no matter how closely the director wants it, they always get changed a little bit here and there. Things get added, things get taken away. And so that is what our thing is to do. And so you can't rely on, if you look at my portfolio, I think it's obvious that I really love doing line drawings of designs and, like doing that detailed kind of intricate work and thinking about what I'm doing. I hope that's obvious anyway. Maybe people look at it and they go, what's this idiot thinking? But the point is that like that work, whilst it can be inspirational to me, maybe it's inspirational to other people who like follow my work, it's not necessarily inspirational for producers, directors, any of these other people that need to be inspired to believe in the project that they're working on. And that is the crux, the real heart of the job of concept artist.
So there's two levels of this. It's like a design pass and then the keyframe pass, which people tend to separate a lot, which at the end, as we kind of just explained, kind of fits together. I guess what you're doing right now, Stefan, what you described, that's almost more of a narrative keyframe. That's like as narrative keyframe as it gets, right? Which I guess we can compare to what we do in the film industry to pitch or extremely pre-production, right? Because we just have a script or sometimes just an idea and we do a narrative keyframe just to inspire people, right? The sole goal of it is to inspire people. However, this is like, again, as you said, like 3 months on the video game, which lasts like years to develop. And on the movie, that's going to be maybe also 3 months of pitch work, right? Max.
Yeah, but no matter what stage you're working at, that is still the point of your job as well.
I know. But I'm just saying that this, it's still good to separate things. And
but I don't
you have
it
to inspire
that
people, but you also have to, like, I don't fully agree with this because we do a lot of problem solving. Like you want to inspire people, but the whole people who hire you and the whole hundreds of people are going to work on the project after us, they don't just want to be inspired. They want to have like some guidelines on how is this mech working.
Yeah, but I think that's exactly the point, is that most of the time they're guidelines. Like, the reality is, spoiler for anybody who hasn't worked in the industry yet, but 99% of what you design does not make it to the end process. It is just inspirational material. I've designed vehicles for movies which they've gone, this is sick, we love it. And then you look at the end result and it looks nothing like what you've designed because it's been taken as inspirational material and then they've changed it. Because, again, like, you know, talking about separating things, I don't think it's that useful at the end of the day because, like, even if you, like, design a really sick, like ATV or something, right? Like some really cool vehicle. If then, you know, let's say you design a matte black ATV, yeah? And then you put it in your film, you figure out what scene it's going to be in. It's going to be in a nighttime scene, all right? There's no other lighting. You put it in context. Oh shit, we can't see it, right? It's all one and the same. The design is influenced by the mood, which is influenced by the setting, which is influenced by the art Bible. Like, it is all the same thing. Yeah, yeah. So you can't really... I think people want to separate things in concept art more than they reasonably should. I think, for example, there was a guy who I was talking to when the first Dune came out, and he was very insistent that the designs in Dune were bad, which I totally disagree with. And I said that I was talking to them about it. I said, you know, regardless of what you think about the designs as individual objects, yeah, within the context of the film, they're amazing because they help set the mood of the film. They tonally feel incredibly correct within that universe. And so you can't just, you know, like, you can't separate things from that larger context. So you have to understand what they're surrounded by and what's going on.
And that is especially the case for movies because, let's say for a game, you might design something, but you don't know exactly, you don't exactly control the way it's going to be seen in a game, right?
It's true.
You might see from any angle, the player might want to just jump on someone's head. You don't know what the fuck they're going to do. For like a movie, you have so much more control of what people are going to see of your design, right? And that's why we can also allow to go faster on design parts. And that's also why it's very important to show to people the way it's going to be seen in the movie. Because let's say you have to design the ATV that you just mentioned. Well, if you'd never see the back of the ATV, chances that we won't even touch the back of it that much. Like, if they exactly know what they want and they just ask you to make a keyframe and a rough design because we don't have too much time, they'll be very happy for you to just design with the keyframe you see. And then maybe the shot is just, you know, you just always see the ATV from the front.
Yeah.
Compared to a game, you'll have someone working on a design by itself for a very long time. And then maybe making a few keyframes for production. But the keyframes, I don't think will be, or at least I don't believe, I might be wrong, but I don't think that any keyframes in movie production is a guide for the design of an asset, right?
I would have, like, so for example, in video games, you definitely wouldn't be doing a keyframe, be like, this is what it's going to look like in the game, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that could be like one or two times that our director will ask you to try to like match, if you have a more stylized game, let's say, or there's a certain specific style that they want you to match to, like, you might be asked to do it, but you know, that's it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
The train has left the station, it's gone now.
It left the keyframe.
I didn't want to ask you guys a question. What do you think is more important to do? Do you think it's valuable to start by starting like a cool sketch / keyframe and then designing within the keyframe? Or is more valuable to do the design first and then make a keyframe about the design?
Well, I kind of think that comes back to that question that we posed right at the start, which is like image building versus world building, right? It's like, how much of these things do you require? For a lot of film work, for example, when you're doing like very quick turnaround stuff, it's a lot more image building skills, right? How do you light it? How are you going to frame things? What's your camera angle here? Like Jules said, are you going to see this thing from one angle for the rest of the thing? Then, all right, from an image building perspective, it's going to be very quick because we don't need a lot of world building. If you're going into something that's going to be seen many, many, many times, right? You're going to see it from a lot of angles and it's very important to the context of the film. Then you have to bring in a lot more world building into that stuff. And so there's a balance to be said there. And I think within that balance, like, it's very project dependent. It's very subject matter dependent as well. It depends on the scale of whatever it is, how much is going to be seen in games and films. It's definitely an interesting question to pose because I think to bring this back to students, one of the problems that we see with students these days, and we discuss it many times, is an over-reliance on 3D and an over-reliance on kit-bashing assets, essentially, right? Which leans way too heavily into the image building aspect of concept art. And the problem is that, you know, while it's great to practice all of your lighting skills, your fundamentals and values and control and all these things that you get to do when you do stuff like that, you're not putting in any world building. And even in the most basic of images for a film, for a video game, there still has to be some world building present.
Yeah, there's always a story. I mean, yeah. I would be shouted at, not shouted at, but I would be told
off. You
would
be hit with a belt.
I would be told off at work if I just did like a pretty...
Castle on a hill.
Yeah.
Dude, you just see them.
Every time, like... If I, yeah, there are some sometimes when my editor just comes to me and is like, don't do this generic stuff. It's like, it has to be an interesting, I mean, I always try to come up with interesting ideas for work and for personal work. And I always start with like a little bit of sketching, world building in my sketchbook. That way I assure that when I actually am doing the idea, there's already something solid behind it.
Can I pose a question then for students? How much image building versus world building is important to actually think about within what you do?
So I'm going to answer that. But just to compare again.
Jules.
No, I'm going to answer this.
But yeah.
In a movie, a keyframe, as you said, there's a lot of world building which is hidden. So someone else in the movie, the director, the writer, the person who gives you the pitch has done a lot of world building, lot of almost design tasks before that. So the sexy keyframes that you see that look very cool, they inherently have a lot of world building because someone else, or sometimes the concept artist, has spent countless hours building the world so the keyframes look nice. And this is what a student should do as well. But sometimes they just focus on making the nice image, but they forget that there's been countless hours of world building done by other people in the movie, right? And so your question, which was...
thought you remembered it. I think you're going to come back to it.
How
do you balance it?
Yeah,
how do you
exactly.
balance these things?
Well,
as a student,
you cannot ignore just one part, right? Which is, I think, the case at the moment. You know, like what Feng Zhu described recently at IMAG, which is you just have a huge thing and then a small character, and then that's your story. No, that doesn't work like this because you need to bring more thought into this, some more narration, and the narration needs some world building to work. Otherwise, you just come up with something generic, which is the problem, I think. Especially when, like, what's the quickest way to get a keyframe? What both of you guys described many times in this podcast already. You get some assets, get bash, get the lighting, render, you're done, right? And this is like the shortest way to get a keyframe, but it's like the most empty way of world building because you don't create anything. You just put a puzzle together and create an image. So I would say that's you need probably 2/3 of world building and 1/3 of keyframe.
Yeah, I think that's personal project. I think that's a pretty good mix. At least within the self-plug, the mentoring that I do, the course is very much structured around. So we split it like half and half across the 8 weeks, which is half doing designing and half doing keyframing. But that's mainly to do with the fact that there's a lot of advice that I usually give people about their keyframing. In an ideal world, like you said, it should kind of be a 2/3 to 1/3 split because the design stuff that you do, if you spend enough time thinking about what you're doing, writing a good brief for yourself, finding something that is creatively not bankrupt, I would say, and like actually, not doing the 1000th Edo era Japanese samurai image on ArtStation or the 10,000th castle on a hill kind of thing, then inherently your keyframe will already look better because you've already done all of the research. Or, you've taken the time to make the subject matter of your keyframe better. So then all of the lighting that you add on top of it, all of this pretty stuff, like you're saying, the mist, the fog, the lens flares, that just accentuates how good the world building and the design that you've done is.
Yeah.
Now, one problem that I've seen some people have to deal with, and I want to bring this back to, I'm going to talk about one of Stefan's projects from years ago when we first met, and he'll be like, I don't
Very
remember that, he's a liar.
I know which one it is. It's the rain one.
Yes, it's the rain one. I want to talk about this.
We already talked about
this before?
Yeah, many times, but I think it's fine. It's worth talking about.
At some point, I'll redo this project just the correct way.
But it's an interesting one because that one
I mean, we
is
all learn,
example
man, it's fine.
Of like too much world building, which then crunched over into the image building stuff. So, I mean, if I remember correctly, you spent like a really long time like writing. Didn't you have like a 10-page like
Okay.
thing of like how the world works.
He wasn't 10, he was 20.
Okay, so I didn't have any. I mean, so it was based on a short story, which was called like Rain or something like that.
It just sounds like you don't remember.
I was so like, Rain, when I said Rain.
No, it was. I can look it up, and we can maybe put it in the description. You can listen to this short story. It's like an old sci-fi short story about a bunch of people landing on a rainy planet that rains there forever.
Yeah.
And like they're trying to get to
England.
Yeah, no. They're trying to find like a safe house, and the safe house is called like a sun dome or something like that. Okay. It's called. So they know that there's a bunch of safe houses on this planet. It's like kind of uninhabited. And they just go around, but they're in a constant rain. And one of the guys, like almost all of them, go like psycho because there's constant rain. So it's like, like the torture they have in the Japanese torture or whatever, like where water torture is constant, like dripping on you.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, that's what they explained there. And then everyone goes crazy except one guy, and he kind of like makes it. He survives. He doesn't shoot himself, you know. And he makes it to the sun dome. And then the sun dome, he opens the sun dome, and it's like this perfect place. And
there's a leak.
Fuck!
There was actually, they go to like...
Okay, wait, Stefan, you did your two-thirds world building. Now the one-third points, please.
And, you know, so I read the story, and I thought it was amazing. And I made a lot of sketches. And then I had like, not only I made sketches, but I did a lot of like background kind of work, like... Oh, the color palette is going to be this way. Oh, and because of the color palette, the keyframes have to start at like blue and then end in red, you know, and cannot go the other way around because this is how it is going to be. So I set like a lot of these rules, and then without even doing any images, and then making the images was like impossible because I had all these rules, and it turns out that the images just didn't look good.
Yeah, I think, because I remember us talking about it back when we were just young little boys, and... I remember really having a good laugh about it, honestly, together, because you were talking about like some image and I was like, what if you change this? I think it would help the image. And you were like, I can't do that.
It's impossible. It's locked in a way.
And I think that's a funny thing.
The
is
rain,
because,
get it on my head.
This is what started his psychotic episode. You know? but I think it's funny because it is those two ends, like especially with a lot of students I speak to, is like, there's very few students that manage to maintain that appropriate balance, I think, where many, many students now, like we said, they do the kitbash route. But then the other end of it is that students take way too much time world building and not enough time actually producing work. And I think one interesting thing that I've seen happen many times is somebody will write their script synopsis or whatever, and they'll start designing stuff. And they'll come to me for feedback and they say like, oh, how can I improve this? And I'll say, well, if you move this character down here, it's going to look a lot better. And they'll say, I can't do that because in the script it says this.
Mm.
And the thing I always say to them is like, so, you know, do you think an art director will ever read that script? And they're like, no. And I'm like, so it doesn't matter then.
I mean, you're the writer of your story. Yeah. Like, especially personal work, like, you are, I mean, it's a big word, but you're the god of what the fuck you're making, right? You decide whatever you make. And so
it's
at the end, you're making an image.
Yeah, right? It's important to remember, like, you're going to have the rest of your career of people telling you how to make images and having a million different criteria you have to fit, often which feels literally impossible sometimes when people give them to you, as we've discussed before on the podcast. And it's, you know, personal work is your time to make the best possible images and to bend as many constraints as possible to make something that looks really impressive and cool.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, like, here applies the thing, like, when you're doing a project and someone has a better idea, you know, or like a good suggestion than you think could, maybe it's going to change it.
Yeah.
Depends, like, if you have a little bit of more time, you just change your project for better, you know, like, and that's okay as well.
Also, like, I personally quite often, when I get a cool idea or when I feel like I get a cool idea, it often comes with the shot, you know, or like how I want to portray.
Same for me.
Yeah. Or like, I was like, oh, that could be a cool keyframe. And
for
then,
a second, I was thinking like a vaccination shot. Oh, really?
COVID-19 vaccine then, and like best inspiration I got ever. No, but like basically if you like sometimes, oh, that's a cool shot. And then I'm going to look for references and then, oh, that would be a cool idea. And so like both kind of feeds the other. So you like don't put yourself in a jail, you know, like just be open to stuff. You can change your mind and you can also think about the way it's going to look like while you think about the idea, and they're both going to influence each other. Also, just to bounce on what you said, that some people, they do almost too much world building. I think that's much less common, but it still happens.
It is, yeah.
Especially when you have like a portfolio project which has like 5 pages of text, and then you have like a little design in the middle of the page, you know?
I have seen, like, during one of the courses, I've done some courses recently, and there was a student there that did like tons of world building, and none of it was reflected in the design. Didn't reflect what this person was saying. I was like, dude, you should have like designed it better. I mean, like, how can you say this like incredible story, but none of it is in the design? Yeah. It's like sad almost.
Okay, question: when we say 2/3 world building, 1/3 keyframe,
yeah,
what do we mean by world building? Do we mean you have to take your little pen and write a little short story? Do we mean you have to like look for references, make some sketches, actually start designing?
Yeah.
So what do we mean by that?
Well, I think like, you know, understanding things like iceberg theory is very important, which is a thing that like Hemingway spoke about, which is to do with, I think we spoke about it on here before, mm-hmm. I've explained it before, which is where 90% of the context is hidden and 10% is what you show, but it implies the other 90% of context. You don't need to have a whole world built. But again, just talking about like my personal experiences teaching, the thing I always encourage people to do is like, you have to have a good brief before you start. You know, if you don't have a brief that you can explain with mm-hmm. clarity, then it's not a well thought out idea. And I think the key test there is like, can you explain it to somebody in 2 sentences succinctly? Yeah. If you can't explain it succinctly, then you don't understand your idea. And that means that you can't progress with it with clarity.
There's something which things we said, you need to know who, why, when, how. If you answer all of these points, then you usually have a pretty broad idea. And answering those questions will almost inherently make that your project is a bit complete because you don't miss any important points.
Yeah, I think the world building, like the way I would approach it is to start doing some sketches, coming up with ideas, looking at images, seeing if you can get inspired. Like sometimes, you know, having like a rough kind of, rather than having like a exact script. For example, I'm doing a Druid house right now project, and it was just meant to be like an abandoned Druid house. That's the whole thing. And what I started doing is just sketches. And try. I knew like where I wanted to place it, so like what kind of style I wanted, maybe something a bit more European based. But other than that, I just started to look into kind of what could be interesting Druid house, and looking at images and trying to find some inspiring imagery and inspiring ideas. And if you sketch enough and look at images enough, you will eventually find something interesting that is simple to explain and makes a lot of sense. So I think there is a way to do it that way as well. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, the golden rule for world building is if you can't show it, it doesn't matter. And I bring that up because I'm going to flog one of my students right now. Sorry, buddy. I won't say their name, but I'm sure if they listen to this, they'll know who they are. But one of my students was recently talking about an idea that they had for a project, and they wanted to have this aspect in the project where they were like, and the whole world has been taken over by poisonous spores that will kill everybody if you touch them. So that's why this city is in this like high up location. And I was like, okay, cool. And, you know, they had like in their reference board, like a bunch of images of these things. And then I was like, so your keyframe? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, is going to be of the city? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, so where do the poisonous spores come in? And they were like, well, that's the backstory for why they're there. And I was like, yeah, but I'm not going to be able to see it in your concept art, right? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, so it's useless information, right? It's not useless. It helped them come up with their final idea. But the point is that our job is a visual medium, right? So if you are trying to put in narrative elements that are not explicitly visually clear, then it becomes very difficult and it can muddy your concept. Another example of a brief that I've seen recently was somebody designed or wrote a brief for a hidden elf village. And were speaking about it, and I was like, so how does this village work? And I'm like, well, they're hidden in the trees. And then when there's no one around, the trees open up and then the village is inside. And I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, so one of your keyframes will be of the village when it's hidden. And they're like, yeah. And I was like, and the other one will be when it's open. They're like, yeah. And I was like, so when it's hidden, it will just be a bunch of trees. And they went, yeah, I guess. Which is like, you know, it's regardless of the world building that you have there, is it worth spending time creating an image of a bunch of trees? No, absolutely not, right? Because yeah. It's something that I could go outside and photograph in my in the park that I live next to.
Unless
so,
sorry.
No, it's fine. But the point is, like, if you can't show it, if you can't visualize it, if you can't demonstrate it to other people in a way that is visually obvious without them having to read a giant blurb on your ArtStation post, don't do it.
Yeah, so that might be like a call out. So if you want to show these trees closed, maybe you want to design the tree closed to see maybe some call outs of like scenes or like some hidden windows and stuff like this. But that wouldn't be a keyframe. That would be like some design call outs.
But it's just generally yes, okay, sure. But it's like generally the aspect of like, I've seen briefs which are like, someone's like, I'm designing an invisible alien. Like, I've literally seen briefs like that, or I'm designing a stealth spaceship that no one can see, or I'm designing a town hidden in the rocks of a canyon. And it's like, all of these briefs become virtually impossible to demonstrate visually in an appealing way, because the whole point of them is they're not visually there, you know?
I want to say, I think like a good rule of thumb, if you have like some sketches, and actually if you have like a thumbnail, that is trying to encapsulate some of this world building, is showing to people and see what they think. Mm-hmm. Like, they go, oh, this looks cool, it's this. And if they can't get what you're trying to show this thumbnail, well, clearly the world building either has to change, or maybe, you know, or maybe the idea has to, you know, either yeah. The world building changes or the sketch changes.
Yeah, I guess if you have to explain to someone what they're looking at, that's a big fail.
Yeah.
like if we talk about the town that you mentioned before with yeah. the spores, a good way to maybe show that would be to have a very almost bird's eye view, and you have like a view of the whole valley. You maybe see the mountain with the city, and then the whole valley with like some very yeah. green gas, you know,
which
and
is that, a useless image from a production design, standpoint.
Yeah. But that let's say like it's a keyframe VFX concept that could work in this context. But yeah, then you want to break it down and see, okay, why is it useful?
Or you could have like characters going down from the, you know, looking up, you look up, you see the town the upstairs city. And there's people going down from the city in like special suits into this stuff, like green gas or something like that.
But I think this perfectly, it's actually really interesting you guys brought that up, because I think it perfectly encapsulates often the problem, going back to the keyframing, with people's understanding of keyframe, which is, as we were talking about right at the start, lots of people think that a good keyframe is a guy in a room picking up a gun and then there's blood on it or whatever the fuck, and it's a close-up of his hand and his face. And actually...
Dude, I've seen so many keyframes.
But actually, if you, you know, no, especially...
It's a girl standing in a corridor and there's like an open window and the curtains are flying a bit in the room.
All right, let's...
Wait, that's my latest piece. Thanks. everyone's going to copy me. But it's interesting because all of these images, right... They are what I would call multi-sequence projects, which is, again, talking about lovely chum Jammer, like something that like I think a lot of people adopted from his mentorship, which I've heard is totally amazing, so I'm not saying anything bad about it. But if I look back at the kind of work that I've done professionally, keyframe-wise, it's never multi-image sequences. That's usually storyboard work. Really, I think a really important thing to understand is that a keyframe is often a kind of everything image that has to encapsulate massive amounts of information all at once. And I think that's why it's very important, you know, like with that city example with the spores, right? Is that you're right, you could show it across multiple images. But when you have the time pressures of being a student, right, and you're making your personal projects, really what you need to do is create images that show off as much information as possible, rather than making loads of tiny images that show off different pieces of information, right? Because in a professional setting, most of what we do keyframe-wise is doing those images that encapsulate massive amounts of the narrative, essentially.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. I think if you can...
Could you try and agree more?
Yeah, no, I think if you can make an image that has multiple layers of world building behind it, rather than just like one, like, oh, here's a house, and then here's open door, and then here's a character, you know, like if you can have a house with an open door and a character in it, it's better than just showing the open door of a character, you know?
I think it kind of goes back, in my opinion, to like the old masters, you know? Like, I think I've spoken before about how much I love the work of Jean-Léon Gérôme and like how amazing his paintings are and stuff. And I think when you look at the paintings of like somebody who is so masterful like Jean-Léon Gérôme, what is really incredible about his paintings is that every single one is so incredibly dense with information. Mm-hmm. They are actually, a lot of his work, I think, is very reminiscent of modern keyframing work. Obviously, it's a million times better than, I mean, no offense to Craig Mullins or Jamie Jones, but you know, it's a different skill set being able to paint images like that on a massive scale on oil.
Canvas.
Yeah. And it's like, what makes it really impressive is like, those images hold massive amounts of narrative and depth, you know? If you look at his like famous image of like the gladiators, for example, you have your main focal point, which is the gladiator. You have this guy on the ground who's like bleeding and begging for his life. You have the crowd behind them, the arena, the scale of it, the atmosphere, the emperor or whoever the hell on top of them, like giving the signal. It has so much storytelling. And that image would be so much worse if it was three different paintings, one of which was the gladiator, one which was the emperor, and one which was the crowd.
You can just imagine people splitting into like shot of the emperor, looking at their finger, and then like looking at the gladiator.
The dramatic gates of the guy going out of the gate.
Yeah. And I think this is like, you know, we do work in the film industry, but I think it's one of the almost misunderstandings of what makes something quote unquote cinematic in our industry is that cinematic does not mean shown in the same sequence of shots that you would in an actual film, mm-hmm. right? That's what storyboarding is. Keyframing is so much more than that. It's about creating an image from which a director could imagine 10, 20 shots within, mm-hmm. right? And that's what the real purpose of an image like that is.
I have my little theory of why we tend to do that. The mistakes, which is why people kind of break everything down. It's like now we use 3D.
Easier.
We use a lot of 3D, right? Yeah. And it's fine also to do mistakes. It's fine to think later and not prepare things before you work, because you can control Z.
Yeah.
You can change your camera angle. We have a lot of freedom, and also we can just always turn the camera, hit render again, and we're like, oh, you know, I don't really know which shot of these three to choose. You know what, I have to do three renders. It's going to take me like 2 hours each to paint them on top of them. I have three keyframes, right? It's like there's very little
friction, almost.
Yeah, it's just, like you don't lose much points, let's say, or like time if you figure it out on the fly, because you can, right? And that means that quite often things is almost a bit diluted or like you can lose the real meaning of it because you keep changing your projects while you make them, rather than if you look at old masters or even if you start, I mean, lately I've been doing much more traditional work and I've been starting to think much more before I start drawing, because I'm like, okay, I'm about to spend 2 hours drawing a fucking plane. I want to know exactly what I'm going to draw, because if I fuck it up after an hour and 30 minutes, I'm going to be pissed. I don't want that. So I need to plan it. So what I'm making is worth my time. And in order to be worth my time, I need to think it through. Right?
I totally
agree.
And
so that's maybe what you should... That's also why we say two-third thinking, one-third keyframe. Because you need to think of what you're going to make. You need to think it through. And then you should start doing the actual thing. Because otherwise, you're going to have to figure it out on the fly and end up diluting your project or losing your first idea or just ending up with something that's less worth making. I guess if you take the time and you actually decide to make it once you're happy with it, you're going to maybe have something which is more worth pursuing, worth spending the time to do.
Yeah. I think one thing is, and this is obviously a vast generalization,
mm-hmm.
but as concept artists generally, I think especially the... Let's say, I mean, we're Gen Z, like the Gen Z iteration of concept artists. We're very scared of things not being easy. I think that's the reality of it. I think we were at the tail end of that, where like we were still kind of raised by Feng Zhu, pretty much, you know, FCD school and those kind of things.
Crying inside,
you know, just like being miserable.
Yeah.
and like working on our fundamentals a lot. But it's definitely, you know, and we've spoken about it before, it's changed. And I think even for us, you know, there is a certain fear of failure that comes with the territory. And I think that comes a little bit almost from having access to 3D and Control Z and all these things, which is, well, why would I fail when I can undo everything and redo everything at a moment's notice? You know, so often we go for the easier image. We go for, oh, let me do tell this in three keyframes rather than one, because actually, realistically, you know, it's way fucking harder to make a keyframe where everything's in there, mm-hmm. because the amount of composition knowledge you have to understand is much higher.
Yep.
The amount of value control you need is much greater. You know, it's one thing, like a painting that I did that was like very informative to me, like in my learning process, was I did a like Star Wars cantina image.
I thought you were going to say that one, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I instantly thought it's like, when you were talking about multiple focal points and stuff like that. Yeah.
But it's an interesting one, because if you look at like modern concept artists, I'm not saying like, well, la-di-da, aren't I great? But a lot of people avoid crowd scenes, right? Why do we avoid crowd scenes? Because the hardest thing to paint, to render, to do it effectively are characters. And so a lot of people will just do an environment, right? A piece of architecture, which is great, but they won't add in the characters at all. And then the next step is, I'll add in my stick man. Right? That's the most basic form of character we can add. Then with 3D, okay, we've got a little bit more freedom. I can do my Unreal characters, my metahumans. I can put in my Daz people, whatever. But even then, most concept artists avoid doing more than one to two characters, mm-hmm. because it's difficult, because creating interactions between people, which is believable, is hard. Making the attention flow between all of these, like, you know, we're naturally like drawn towards humanoid figures, you know, towards faces. So controlling the detail and the values to move between things is very difficult. And that image was great. It was a great learning experience for me, because I was suddenly forced via this task that I had set myself to just deal with all of those problems. And it was great. And I don't think it's the greatest image in the world. You know, I don't think it's even the best image that I've done. But it was an image that I learned a lot from, both in terms of, like, in terms of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Comp, value, color theory, just so that I could effectively guide the viewer's eye around the canvas.
Definitely, the more I've been working at Sharkmob, the more complicated images I've been doing. And I don't think it's because... I think because my art director always wanted me to do more complicated images. I just didn't know how. And now that I know a little bit more how to do it, I had to put in more story, more characters. I mean, I was so afraid of doing painting characters, but eventually it just becomes an inevitability where if you have to tell a story and, you know, it's a game and you want to have an interaction, you need to put in the characters, you need to put in the story, you have to paint it in. You can't just be like, oh, here's a pretty building and a bunch of trees and this looks cool, you know? It just doesn't work.
So we talked at the start about world building versus
image building,
which image building is almost narration, I guess.
I think it's like setting the mood and the light and everything.
So like,
it's the cinematography.
When
we
talk about keyframe sequence, which what we've been describing as, let's say, the not the bad, but the
easier option.
The easier option and the option that, I guess, to me, focuses more on narration, right? You have, because it's almost like a small comic book.
Yeah.
It's almost like a short story. And so if you focus on narration, usually that's why you have not a lot of point of view focals, because it's like a simple narration happening, right?
Sure.
Compared to if you focus on just one image, you have a bit less narration, but you have to focus more on world building.
Because is that true? No, I don't think that's true.
No, I think you need, like, if you have a big image, you could just have like a lot of story in one image. But it's like in movies, right? In movies, you will
have simple
images.
In order to have a good story in one image, you need to do a lot of world building. You know what I mean? Like it requires more effort. I mean, that's what we said before, but it requires more effort to do a good narration in one image than in three of them because of the way you present it.
It sounds like a slightly more simplistic version of what we've been saying, but I guess in general, I agree. I don't think that it's like two separate things. It's like, not to argue between us, but you know, it's like
fine.
there's the world building aspect, which is very important to creating effective imagery, and then there are the image building aspects, which, you know, are when you understand the higher level of those things, which is making those singular images which have a lot more depth, allow for maybe a greater sense of world building within them, you know, if you make the harder option potentially. But it depends, right? Project to project. I just think the point being that the point I was trying to get across was like, for all of those things where people talk about how keyframes aren't effective, it's just the way that people are approaching keyframes.
Yeah,
Those incredibly dense, beautiful images that people like Jamie Jones or Craig Mullins create have massive amounts of value in a production setting, not only as inspirational material, but also as influential pieces of imagery to help guide the production.
Cool. So Keyframe is not dead.
No. It's very much alive.
You should continue doing keyframes. However, let's talk about how everything we said translate to a keyframe portfolio piece, right? So how do you do a project with a keyframe within?
Pro.
But why should you have within this project on top of your keyframe to make it valuable?
Tell us.
Okay, well, you need to, I mean, you want to say? Go for it.
I think just probably following a simple task where you start with some sketches, build a world, come up with a unique idea, do some thumbnails, and then start seeing the designs within the thumbnails, maybe change the designs and stuff like that. And then start just ramming as much information as you can into one image.
So basically you don't want to just have one keyframe in your ArtStation project, right? You want to show some sketches, you want to show the research you did, you want to show some design callouts, you want to maybe show some iterations of the design you did, some thumbnails iterations you did to show that you did the homework and you did the work to build the narration and build the world building.
You want to show prior a to process.
Keyframe. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And by showing this process, then you'll be able to add almost automatically more value to your keyframe rather than just kitbashing something without having the process and the thought before and finishing with just one image, which might look cool, but doesn't have any depth to it and doesn't have anything more to show than the final image because there is, apart from the small narration within the image, nothing more to show.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree.
I would say...
go on, Steph.
Just final thing I want to say, like, I often do images where they get more complex as I work on them. So at least in the sketch phase, maybe not so much in the final phase, they could also, but by the time I'm already doing final painting, the story is figured out. But certainly, if you do like... Because it's once you have a base, it's easier to build on top of it. So sometimes you might do a sketch and could be seem kind of like a simple story, but the more you look at it, the more you can add to it and come up with more stories behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And not just come up with like more backstories, but actually stories that you can put into the image. And then maybe you need to go back and resketch what you already done, but because now you're going to have a better sketch. Mm-hmm. Because
an iterative process.
Yeah, just an iterative process, yeah. It's never bad to like go back and resketch your thumbnail with more cool shit in it, you know.
And I think it's that thing about more cool shit in it is actually, although very crudely said, very valid because that is ultimately why keyframes are valuable in a portfolio. Yes, they show off image building skills. Yes, they show off an understanding of value and all these things that are important within any concept art process, but they're also showcases for all of the quote unquote cool shit that you've designed. They show how you've thought about these things fitting together. They show about the narrative you perceive these things to be in, and they bring those things to life in a way that simple sketches or even full design renders just can't. So it's always a good thing to consider. And you'll hear loads of people. I'm sure there will be people listening to this who will go like, nah, that's not the case. I've never done a keyframe in my life. But in our experiences, we have done that kind of stuff. And we know plenty of people who've done exactly the same thing. And from our professional experience, and again, it is our experiences ultimately, we can really see the value of them. So we don't think they're something that you should avoid in your portfolios at all.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, if you follow what we just said, which is, to have a process, right?
Yeah.
Also, it just maybe having an end goal as a keyframe is a great way to make a big project. You know, it's a great way to not just make, oh, I'm going to make a prop and you're finished. You know, you make a prop, you make maybe some costume designs, you make maybe some building designs, and all this tied up in a final keyframe. So it's a great kind of overall, how do you say, overall...
final game.
Not...
idea.
Yeah, or like a red line. You're going to say the red line? That's, I think that's French again. But like, yeah, a whole glue to a project that you can use to show a lot of different design skills and have a nice final keyframe to kind of glue it all together.
Nice. Cool. Any closing words for us, Stefan?
No,
I just think one sentence. Anything.
The more you draw, the better your idea gets.
Not necessarily true, I feel, but
no, it's 100% true.
The more you think about the rain,
think about the rain.
Well, that will be the end for today's episode. We really hope you enjoyed listening, and if you want more, please feel free to subscribe and ring the notification bell. We release episodes every 2 weeks, and if you want any more additional information about the podcast or the event, be sure to check out our Instagram linked in the description below. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon in the rain.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.